So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
If I'm not mistaken, there is a Vampiro Sting match on here where you've got to light somebody on fire.
Oh, wow. Is that the event that changed the industry forever?
No, I'm going to let you just watch and find
out.
Oh,
really?
What it is.
Okay.
All huge right. Letdown.
This should be good.
Is Tank Abbott on us?
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. See, that's what I fucking mean. Okay, it's 2-on-1 for the U.S. title.
Jesus Christ, I'm going to hate this show. I can't really remember it other than one thing.
That'll be fine.
It'll be good.
Tonight, the Great American Bash will make history. Ric Flair will battle his son, David Flair, in the most important match of his lifetime.
If I lose to you, I will retire from this business for the rest of my life.
In the asylum, the only way out is to say, I quit.
I'm going to get crazy in the asylum.
Find out if it's Hogan's stepping stone to the world title or the last match of his career.
Billy Kidman is going to be the supreme sacrifice.
Kevin Nash and Jeff Jarrett will face off for the world title. Flames will be ignited in the most bizarre match imaginable.
Only the sinners are going to burn in hell.
In a human torch match, the only way to win is to set your opponent on fire. And now, WCW presents Great American Bash, brought to you by Casco GTX.
America, fuck yeah!
It's that time of the week again, everyone. It's time for Review Away. I am John Pollock, joined as always by Wei Ting. And Wei, both of us have our coffees here, so I'm hoping that we sound alive, enthusiastic, and intrigued as we review the 2000 Great American Bash.
Yeah, I hope so too, because getting through this show was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. I had to actually split it up into 4 or 5 different viewings.
You did not enjoy this show.
No, you gave it to me actually last week, so I had a good 7 days.
At least. Yeah. I had to go on a trip to LA, and we had to do this podcast earlier than usual last week, so you had ample time to watch this pay-per-view.
I tried my best, but it took one of our what is his name? Stephen Wright, I believe.
Yes, who saved me too, because... Yeah. I had to watch some of this online as well. I had to split it up between using the VHS...
We don't encourage piracy. We don't encourage things
unless
like that.
It helps us in terms of reviewing an event, because then I feel that whatever disservice we are doing to the industry, we are giving back in the sense that we are reviewing it and giving people some form of entertainment in exchange.
Okay, but this is like the argument about sampling rights. Do you think that somebody...
I love sampling. I think it's great when people do it.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't have a problem. If Queen is so upset with Vanilla Ice, then they should realize that their music lives on through Vanilla Ice.
But Vanilla Ice is making money off of Queen's hard work. Just like we're making money, tons of money, off of the work of Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff.
First of all, I'll disagree, because I don't think any hard work went into the planning of this show. But let's just say that, I mean, it's taking a piece of art... And you're interpreting it into your own vision. You're taking a musical, a bar or a lyric, mm-hmm. or something of that nature, and you're construing it into a completely different way. When you hear The Moments, Love on a Two-Way Street, and then you hear Jay-Z, those are two completely different songs.
True, but The Moments, I'm sure, were paid for whatever they put into it.
But should I want to go out, I cannot even purchase the Great American Bash 2000. So as a consumer, I am not even allowed to go out and give money for this event. So how? That was given out to the public. This is not some secret event.
This is up to the WWF. They could put out an anthology of WCW.
You can't
Russo
put toothpaste back into the holder, Way. Once it's out, it's out. this event was broadcasted on pay-per-view, and we just want to celebrate the 10-year anniversary.
All right. Okay. Keep uploading all of the shows that we review onto Mega Video, whatever. It really helps us out a lot, actually. So, yes, I definitely encourage piracy.
So let's kick off the Great American Bash 2000, Wei. Do you remember where you were on Sunday, June the 11th of 2000?
Nope.
I was watching this pay-per-view, Wei. I sadly bought this pay-per-view and I was... yeah! I paid for this pay-per-view.
That's true.
So fuck it.
So you, this is like a backup.
Yeah, you got that's a backup. It. If I have the hard copy of it, I acquire the rights to the digital file of it online.
Okay.
That's how I go to sleep at night.
So why did you order this pay-per-view? Were you working for the law at this point?
No. I would have been 16 years old at the time when I was in high school.
Well, you started with the law pretty early, didn't you? While you're in
high school. I did some stuff for the website, but no, I was not by any means getting pay-per-views for free or anything.
You were just an obsessive wrestling fan.
I was. Yeah.
How did you get the money to pay for this show?
Well, usually I'd split them with my brother or something like that. So, I mean, it would be like $30 a month for like the WWF and the WCW show.
You would spend $30
I wouldn't get every pay-per-view.
But I mean, you had a job at like, what, Silver City at
At this time, 2000, I worked at Canada's Wonderland.
So you took your hard-earned Canada's Wonderland money from the summer and you would invest it in a year's worth of pay-per-views. WCW pay-per-views.
Yeah, I can't remember how many WCW ones I got, but the 2000 pay-per-view collection was not a... It wasn't a very happy time.
You have a lot of them, actually. You have like, Mayhem from that year. Like,
That's true.
You've got a bunch of them from that time.
They're worth a lot, Wei. The WCW forgotten pay-per-views of 2000. Well, let's get into this one, because I want to always remember this one. Great American Bash, we start off, Wei, with a video of Goldberg returning to Nitro 2 weeks ago to assist Kevin Nash, and then he was arrested by Eric Bischoff. And this is to set up the pay-per-view featuring a guy who is not technically on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, this was in the midst of that whole Millionaires Club versus New Blood storyline.
What an awesome storyline.
What exactly, I wasn't really watching that at the time. What exactly is this storyline? Because
Russo and Bischoff returned, they basically broke up and there were two factions. There was the New Blood, which were all the young fuckers who felt that they weren't getting their necessary push. And then there was the Millionaires Club, which were all the older guys. So you're positioning the older guys as these rich fuckers that won't put the young guys over.
Yeah.
So and the old guys were the faces. And yeah, the young guys trying to move up the ladder were the heels.
But it was not supposed to be that way to start, was it?
No, that's how they pretty well.
Even since the beginning? It wasn't just a matter of the fans cheering the Hogan and those guys more than these young
guys? I'm pretty sure from the start they were building the New Blood as the heels.
Because
they paired Russo with the New Blood along with Bischoff right at the start.
It's so absolutely ridiculous.
Wow.
Wow.
We have a very bad video to preview the event. Both Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan are putting their careers on the line in separate matches. Plus, we have a Human Torch match, we have an Asylum match, we have a Tables match. Tons of stipulations on tonight's show, Wei.
As you'll see, probably one of the... Okay, every match not only has a stipulation, I mean, most of them have a title. Let's get to the matches themselves.
Okay.
Holy shit.
The event, we had Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Scott Hudson on commentary, and they teased a huge surprise being promoted by Eric Bischoff tonight that they stated would change the face of sports entertainment forever. So, setting the standards fairly high. And I remember going into this event, everyone was thinking, Shane McMahon is going to show up in WCW. What a preposterous, ridiculous rumor. Why would Shane McMahon show up in WCW in 2000?
Why would Shane McMahon leave the WWF?
Well, he's not going to TNA wrestling. I mean, why would you go to WCW at this point in time? Especially in 2000 when Shane was at that part in very good standing.
Yeah.
And heir apparent.
When he could just buy WCW months later.
Yes. And provide a compelling storyline. So, first off, the Misfits in Action come out. If you forgot them, it was General Rection, Lieutenant Loco, Major Stash, Corporal Cajun, and Major Guns in a group comprised of puns who come out, and Loco cuts a promo on Disco Inferno, and then Loco, Chavo Guerrero, pulls something out of his pants and says, "Say hello to my little friend." And then he threatens to murder Disco Inferno live on pay-per-view.
Yeah, he pulls out a grenade.
That's what he pulled out?
It was a grenade. Because
they couldn't say it on pay-per-view.
It was a grenade.
That's what it was. I didn't know what the fuck he pulled out, but I'm guessing standards and practices would not allow them to say that there was a grenade.
He pulled out a grenade for absolutely no reason. I didn't understand that. Was this his character at the time? Just some...
He was loco. Crazy. Then Disco Inferno comes out with Conan, Rey Mysterio, Juventud Guerrera, and Tigress. And we have Lieutenant Loco versus Disco Inferno for the Cruiserweight Championship, which would be the least stipulations on any match tonight, Way. Just for the Cruiserweight title. 8 people were at ringside for this match, Way. 8 people. These guys travel in entourages. We see...
Why was Disco Inferno in the Filthy Animal?
I don't know, but they started calling him the Hip Hop Inferno during this match.
Scott Hudson at one point has a brilliant line. Disco Inferno, the answer to the SAT question. What doesn't belong in this list with the Filthy Animals?
He had some great lines on this show. At one point, Tony Schiavone refers to Van Hammer as Private Stash, and then he's corrected, it is Major Stash. This coming after his first mistake, where he called Lash LaRue Colonel Cajun, and they said, no, he's Corporal Cajun. They wouldn't have let him get away with any bullshit on this opening match. Then they're having like 3 minutes they had until a character that I completely have... I do not recall this guy ever.
It was Christopher Lloyd.
That was not Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, it was.
No way.
Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future.
He was playing Pops?
No. That's who I thought it was, though. It's the guy that looks just like...
Do you ever remember this guy? I don't remember him at all.
Me neither. I didn't really watch any of this at the time.
This guy named Pops, who apparently is the grandfather of General Rection, or the father of General Rection, who's Hugh Morris, comes down to the ringside area, and the Filthy Animals knock him down, and he's just laying on the ground, and then they've got to continue the match. So the referee's distracted. Juventud Guerrero runs in and attacks Loco.
With... the Hoovy Elbow, followed by...
Yes, he attempts the Hoovy Elbow, which everyone is the People's Elbow. But then what happens here is
Disco
hits the Last Dance,
which is
the Stunner. So we have just seen the Stone Cold Stunner and the People's Elbow in succession to open our WCW pay-per-view. Could we be more minor league? I don't think so. Then we see Cajun attack Disco, and Loco gets the victory.
This poor referee having to...
he had to basically just forget anything was happening in the ring and turn his back and close his eyes. Because it was impossible to miss 8 people running in at the same time behind his back. So, Lieutenant Loco retains the absolutely worthless Cruiserweight Championship. Then we get a brawl after the match, and it leads to Pop still being laid out on the apron floor, and Major Guns gives him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and then Pops does a reversal and gets on top of Guns, and he's pulled off. So he's playing the horny old man after Major Guns.
The match was completely meaningless.
It was like 5 minutes, and it sucked.
They could have... the whole reason for this match was just to have Major Guns come out and take her top off. They could have just done that to save us time.
Backstage, Eric Bischoff is with Ernest Miller, along with the police, who promised that the arena is secure tonight and no one will get in that doesn't need to be. Then we go to Gene Okerlund, who is with the Mamalukes, Big Vito and Johnny the Bull, who are getting ready for their match with Chronic. And when I realized that this tag match was up next, I was about to text Way and apologize for this choice this week.
The Mamalukes, they just... their promo is essentially just very, very base impressions of Italians. I mean, like, similar to the level of acting that you would see, like, with your friends in a
game. At a high school.
Yeah, or in a game of like Cranium or something. Let's say you pull out a card, act like Robert De Niro. You would see this level of acting from the Mamalukes in there.
They teased dissension over who is the hardcore champion with Big Vito wearing the title. So this got my interest going. They're teasing the breakup before the match. That we could get a Big Vito Johnny the Bull feud coming. Then we get, I don't know, Way, if this was on the online version,
it
but
was.
At least on the VHS, we got, if you order this pay-per-view and send in your cable bill, you can get a Hulk Hogan inflatable raft.
But only one request per household.
Yes.
While supplies last.
Come on, you can't have too many Hulk Hogan inflatable rafts out there. And everyone, no, I did not send my cable bill in for this raft.
How did they figure that this was what their audience wanted? How did they associate rafting with wrestling and Hulk Hogan?
Maybe if there was a hole in the raft, it would be an appropriate metaphor for WCW at the time. A sinking ship.
Okay.
Zing. Big Vito and Johnny the Bull against Chronic. And this, not only are they having a tag match, it's a number one contenders match, way. They discussed the surprise tonight, and Madden notes that there are internet reports, newsletter writers, and hotlines that don't know what the surprise is.
No, nobody knows what the surprise is.
No one knows what it is. Johnny the Bull and Brian Clark made the early nominees for tonight's Scott Putski Award. These two looked crazy.
I would say the Mama Lukes as well.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned Johnny the Bull, Big Vito. Right. I don't know. He might have been on something, but he didn't know what he was doing while he was on
that's
it.
Right.
Brian Clark, I just, like, he moved in slow motion. I had to hit play to make sure I was not going, like, one frame per second.
Yeah.
He was just atrocious in this match. Clark finally took a back bump 2 minutes in. The first time he sold at all during this match.
Did you mention that Vito this whole time is wearing his
belt? That was next on my notes here. Vito wears the title during the entire match.
How is that?
He's doing a Tim Sylvia gimmick.
But during your match, how is that legal? If people can use a belt as a weapon, it would be like wearing a pair of brass knuckles while you're fighting.
Did you watch the main event on this show? Title shots weren't a big problem.
Wait, all right, are you going to get to the finish of this match?
Yeah, I am.
Really finish?
Huge chance of New York sucks started midway through the match. We saw Bryan Adams, he had, I believe it was Vito, up for a Samoan drop and then turned it into a brain buster, and I thought he killed Vito. He dropped him right on his head.
Yeah.
Looked terrible. Johnny tries to jump from the mat to the top rope, slips, and then tries again, and then jumped down, and Brian Clark had, like, left the ring and was writing a postcard to his wife in the time that Johnny the Bull missed this. Horrible spot. And then Vito goes to talk to the commentators and is not there for the hot tag as Johnny takes the High Times, which is a double choke slam for the win, and Chronic are your number one contenders for the tag titles, way.
The cameras never cut to Vito. All you're left with is the announcer saying, hey, Vito, your opponent's getting beat up. Meanwhile,
we never saw him leave the ring or where he went to.
What Vito was doing is he was retrieving his belt, which fell off at some point. So the finish of this match is that there's a guy who cares so much about shining his belt, he forgets he's actually in the match. That's how they lose.
Then, in one of my favorite moments of this entire pay-per-view, I never remembered how terrible Paula Paulshock was as a
Pamela Paulshock.
Is that her name?
I think so.
Oh, Pamela Paulshock. She is with Diamond Dallas Page and asks him, are you ready for your ambulance match? The ambulance match coming up next.
DDP, tonight you're up against Mike Awesome in an ambulance match. And he says he's going to put an end to your career like he did to Canyon.
So what are you calling him? What is he? What are you calling Awesome? A career killer? I don't think so, bimbo.
She's so bad.
She was horrible. She looked like she was about to laugh. DDP calls her a bimbo, and then he calls Kimberly his super bitch and soon-to-be ex-wife, and says that tonight he has motivation, perspiration, and yes, stimulation for you, Mike Awesome. But he was having an ambulance match with Mike Awesome coming up next. Awesome looked absolutely jacked here for this match. Another candidate. DDP brings out Chris Canyon in a wheelchair and a halo to the top of the ring entrance. Why would you bring out a recovering paralysis victim to such a dangerous match as an ambulance match where you're going to be wheeling one of these guys right past Canyon? What could go wrong? DDP had everything he had coming.
Canyon was paralyzed after his fall off the three-story cage from Ready to Rumble.
What a stupid angle that was. The rules of the ambulance match were apparently that there were no rules because the very first spot of this match, both guys punched the referee out and knocked him out cold. Why would you do that? You need the referee to call the finish of the match. They dueled with chair shots. And one of my favorite lines, this was just great. Scott Hudson, I think awesome. He goes to grab some tables and Hudson yells, "It's not a tables match!" And Schiavone, without missing a beat, "Yeah, that's coming up later." This is a ridiculous pay-per-view. Yeah, that's coming up later. We see an awesome bomb to DDP on the floor through a table. The officials... Okay, DDP is laid out on the floor, so the officials come out, lift DDP up onto the stretcher, and then start wheeling him out. They do all the work for Awesome.
Isn't that what they're supposed to do?
The guy would put him on the ambulance, the stretcher, and wheel him to the back. And this, he just knocks him down, gets into the ring, and like lays back while the officials pull him up onto the stretcher and wheel him back. What are you accomplishing in this? I hit a move on you on the floor, and now the referees are going to take you to the back? What does that settle?
No, it means...
Ooh, I took you past a line. I hate ambulance matches.
You knock a guy out, and then you see if he can stay down for the length of time that it takes for the people to wheel him from the ring to the ambulance.
In a spot that had to have been a joke on waiting, Awesome hit two frog splashes and then decided, "I'm going to put a chair underneath DDP and on top of DDP and attempt a frog splash." He missed, and this led to Kimberly running in and attacking DDP with a pipe. Miss Hancock then ran down and attacked Kimberly and took her to the back.
So somehow Kimberly is the heel.
Yeah, Kimberly is the heel because she had just turned on her husband, Diamond Dallas Page.
Everything is so backwards.
It's so hard to keep track of this shit.
Fuck.
Then Awesome teases an awesome bomb off the top rope, but he's stopped by a low blow. DDP hits a second rope Diamond Cutter to Awesome, and then wheels him to the back. And I thought DDP had won the match here, and that's what I had written down. But then later I realized that did not happen. Eric Bischoff's music just plays. He comes out, and he's about to waffle Canyon with a chair. DDP jumps Bischoff before he can attack Canyon, and Canyon raises to his feet, tears off his halo, and delivers a Diamond Cutter to DDP off the stage and through a crash pad. Hudson says that Canyon has cost DDP his wife and his house. Somehow his real estate was fucked up during this match. And the announcers are shocked at this turn of events, and they actually tried to analyze and break down this heel turn, when it was planned, what happened in the hospital. And they try way too hard than Vince Russo ever did to explain this. Because in storyline, DDP visited Canyon in the hospital every day after Awesome threw Canyon off that three-layer cage. So Canyon turns on DDP. This was the definition of a Vince Russo heel turn, where it makes zero sense.
Makes zero sense. But don't worry, they'll explain it later.
Oh, yeah, it was
we'll come up with an explanation later.
So... We go from...
Only in the second match, is that right?
That was match number three.
Three, okay. Oh, God.
So just to recap, everyone, we just saw Chris Canyon come out in a halo where they did a spot in the May pay-per-view at Kemper Arena where he fell from the ceiling into the arena floor.
Oh, my God.
And we go now into this next match where G.I. Bro rappels from the ceiling into the ring.
And...
This is a very tasteful organization.
I remind you all that this was in June of 2000, which is a little over a year.
Yeah, and the Canyon spot was in the arena 1 year after Over the Edge.
Fuck, man.
Sean Stasiak is G.I. Bro's opponent, and for those who are not familiar, who is G.I. Bro, eh? Besides being a racially offensive name.
G.I. Bro is what we now know as Booker Huffman, a.k.a. Booker T., who somehow was able to recover from this. G.I. Bro.
My first note was that G.I. Bro would be the WCW champion by the end of the next pay-per-view.
Oh, my God. What got to me about that whole zipline thing was that this was only the fourth match of the show. This company had so much money to waste. They had just...
We had just seen an ambulance match.
Oh, my God.
I know Stasiak and Booker did not click at all during the early part of this match. Booker used the Sean Waltman spinning heel kick, which I think is a move that instantly kills any heat in the match. Not that there was any in this. Madden notes that these matches shorten your careers and is the reason guys only have 2 to 3 boot camp matches in their career. I forgot. This is a boot camp match, everyone, which is, translation, a last man standing match.
Okay.
Booker gets thrown into the steps so that the cameras pick him up saying, ah, shit. And yes, okay. The match continued. This was only like 5 minutes in.
Oh, this was so bad. This was one of those shows that kind of made me unhappy to be alive. Like, it just started to stress me out about all the other things I hate about my life. But, like, small things, too. Like, I was sitting in my living room watching this, and then, like, I just, like, all of a sudden feel just kind of really tense and uncomfortable, and I would just, like, pick out things like, my couch is too short. Like, I wish I had a longer couch to rest my thighs, and I would just be really uncomfortable. And I lost my remote, and I just got really, really stressed out and angry at my life.
We'll wait till the finish of this, involving something called a Lexer. Shivani notes that the Maryland State Athletic Commission is watching this closely, which I deny occurred. I was not watching this closely because it was too much. And they were monitoring a small cut on Stasiak. Boot camp match, maybe stopped due to a small cut. They did, I think, 50,000 near finishes where Mickey J counted to 9 and then Booker got up. They then decided to do a sleeper spot with the crowd chanting boring. Then the bookend by Booker, but Stasiak gets up, walks into a missile dropkick, and then Chuck Palumbo runs in. And he is holding what I guess bodybuilders use to exercise their forearms. It's called Lex Luger's Lexer arm thing.
Lex Flexer.
Is that what they called it?
Yeah.
I thought it was called the Lexer.
No, it's the Lex.
The Lex Flexer.
There's a Wikipedia link. If you look up Lex Flexer.
Fuck.
So Chuck Palumbo comes in carrying this weapon.
Yeah.
And referee does not do a thing.
Nope. He misses. Stasiak low blows Booker T with the Lex Flexer. Then Booker ducks into a double clothesline. Both men duck for a double clothesline spot, and Palumbo fucks this up royally. And then Booker knocks out Stasiak with the Lex Flexer for the win, and Hudson calls G.I. Bro the superior athlete. This match went 14 minutes. This was horrible. Horrible, horrible match.
Madden closes off the segment with the line, G.I. Bro has truly landed on the beach in WCW.
What does that mean? I mean,
means he's
reached. Is that like an army reached, term?
Yeah, he's reached.
Is that like Apocalypse Now or?
I guess maybe he was in battle and then he swam back to home base. He swam back to.
Wouldn't
the
that
beach.
Make more sense if you were like doing a Navy gimmick where you're in the water, reaching a destination?
You probably.
I don't know. I don't want to analyze it. I don't give a shit. Backstage, Ric Flair arrives in a limo with his family, including a young Reed Flair. And then Gene Okerlund is with Hulk Hogan, who says, we can stay around as long as we'd like. And he calls Kidman the flea market champion. Everyone, Billy Kidman is the heel in this program.
Oh.
Then we cut to ringside, and they decide to show up close a sign that says, the real Triple H, Hollywood Hulk Hogan. And that leads us to Billy Kidman versus Hulk Hogan, with Horace Hogan as the guest referee.
You sure?
Yeah.
That wasn't the order of mine.
Really? What match was next for you?
Douglas and Wall.
Oh, shit. You're right. I was on the wrong page. Backstage, Gene Okerlund is with Chris Kanyon. And he asks why. And Kanyon says that Bischoff promised to make him a star if he took out Diamond Dallas Page. And he says he is positively Kanyon. And he does the diamond cutter sign. Then we go to a video of DDP getting out of the ambulance, and Goldberg's monster truck arrives outside of the Baltimore Arena.
They got a fucking monster truck.
Well, yeah, boy. That's what he drives in. That's his vehicle. That's his mode of transportation.
They just had way too much money. Way too much money.
Yes. Then Shane Douglas comes out, and he cuts a promo on Hulk Hogan and Dick Flair, two men he is not working programs with, and says, he will define his career tonight. The Great American Bash 2000 will define the career of Shane Douglas. And then he announces to the Wall that he wants to turn their table match into a best of five for, quote, a drag-ass fight.
a knockdown, kick-ass, Baltimore drag-ass fight with five tables broken, not one.
The announcers are very confused. They're not sure if this is a best of five tables match or a best of nine.
They think...
It doesn't matter because anything after one is the law of diminishing returns and they don't matter. And Shivani, I guarantee you thought this line was really clever because he repeated it like two times during the match. Shane Douglas has backed the wall into a corner.
Last week you mentioned that something would happen on the show that would change the industry forever. And while I was watching this, I was never quite sure what you were referring to because it could have been any of these things. Like this best of five tables match. Five tables.
Never seen a best of five tables match. We see they fight on the outside. Douglas takes a choke slam through the first table. Zero pop, and it looks like he killed himself going through that table. Hudson now gives us an update that it is a best of five. Right at the entrance, conveniently, there was a very large ladder set up with tables surrounding it, and Hudson at least tries to explain that this was a plan by Shane Douglas, and this leads to an ECW chant when they see the ladder and the guys climbing up the ladder, and Douglas pulls out the brass knucks and hits the wall, who goes through three tables. Camera, of course, misses the brass knuck shot. The announcers are confused at the finish. And then the wall gets his heat back by chokeslamming referee Mark Johnson through a table onto concrete.
Okay. First of all, when the wall and Douglas were standing on top of that ladder, the wall just takes the worst bump off the ladder. He gets hit, turns around for a full second, looks at where he's landing, and then proceeds to jump off. Secondly, this was two tables. He fell through two tables, not three.
I think there was one at the bottom that was hard to see.
No, there was. Come on. There was no table down there. If there was, they should have made it a lot more clear, not put a curtain over it. He fell through two tables, and the match just ends.
Meanwhile, I'm
watching this. I'm hearing them describe this best of nine tables matches. I'm assuming we got three more tables to go. But the two tables break, and suddenly the bell ends, or the bell rings.
Why did they have to do best of anything? Why couldn't it have been one? And build up to that spot with the ladder.
Well, because you have to give the audience something they'd never seen before. You have to surprise them at every second of the show.
Anyone who defends Vince Russo, I want you to just sit through every 2000 WCW pay-per-view and tell me. Because this is the epitome of his booking. Where it's just doing shit for the sake of doing shit. Without any rhyme or reason, nor anybody giving a shit. You break one table, and you'll get a pop. You break 40 tables... Guess what? By number eight, no one cares. Stupid match. Hogan is in his tights and his feather boa and drives into the arena in a Dodger wearing his tights. Madden says that...
A Dodge Charger.
And Mark Madden notes that Hogan is sweating like the Nitro Girls prior to a pregnancy test. Which I guess was some inside joke. That leads us way to something that has never been seen before on pay-per-view.
Another one. A
two-on-one handicap match for the United States singles title. Scott Steiner defending the U.S. title against Tank Abbott and Rick Steiner, with Bischoff coming out and announcing that it's a handicap match to start, because originally it was Steiner and Tank Abbott, but that wouldn't be compelling enough. And Hudson notes that Scott loves the Asylum because it's man-on-man. Rick helps Scott with the chain... the spot is that Scott grabs a chain and goes to hit...
No.
Tank grabs the chain.
Okay, yeah, Tank and Rick are teaming off. By the way, so this cage lowers, and this cage is basically like a mini elimination chamber. They spent the money to build this thing, and all they use it for is a visual prop for this shitty 5-minute undercard match.
So the few people that bought tickets will have an obstructed view of the match.
This cage did not play a role in this match whatsoever. You already have three guys in there, so Tank grabs a chain, and then Rick suddenly, all of a sudden, has a change of heart and says, well, Tank, you don't need to go this far. This is my brother. So he tries to stop Tank from doing it, but Tank does it anyway, so Rick pushes Scott out of the way, and instead he gets hit by Tank Abbott's chain. So now there's this deep emotional brotherly compassion angle
after a 3-minute match.
I think they were trying to eventually Scott Steiner gets the upper hand and then defeats Tank Abbott with the Steiner recliner or something. But I think they were trying to work some sort of like, you know, that episode of The Simpsons when Lisa and Bart play on a hockey team and then they play on opposing teams and at the end.
I never watched The Simpsons, so explain.
Well, they play on opposing hockey teams. And there's this huge, huge match. And the two of them are the best players on their team. Like, Lisa's the goalie. And then Bart has a penalty shot for a shootout. But at the end, when it comes down to his final goal, while all the audience is watching, they see that they've turned into monsters because of the sport. And instead, they just hug in the middle of the ring.
I guarantee you that Simpsons episode had many more layers and emotional satisfaction than the end of this Asylum match that went 3 minutes long, of which Rick was more than happy to double-team his brother and then take a chain shot for him. Oh, this company at this point. Then we went to the Ric Flair arrival with his family inside of a limo. Okerlund with Hogan, where he buries Kidman. And then that leads to Billy Kidman against Hulk Hogan. Horace Hogan is the guest referee. And remember, everyone, that Billy Kidman is the heel they are trying to elevate in this program. And we've got Scott Hudson noting that somewhere a flea market is without a main event tonight. Awesome stuff, guys. It's all Kidman selling to start the match. The size difference is just ridiculous. We see a running hip toss where Kidman gets put through an announce table. Torrey Wilson comes out and gives knucks to Hogan. So we've got a almost identical finish to the Shane Douglas wall match with brass knucks. Kidman comes from behind Hogan and knees him into Torrey on the apron. Torrey falls down and has injured her ankle. We see a brass knuck shot by Hogan by Kidman for a two count. Kidman knocks out Horace with the brass knucks. And then Torrey low blows Kidman. And Hogan hits Kidman with the brass knucks for the win. And he was working with Horace Hogan all along. So Hulk Hogan will not be retiring, everyone.
Nope.
And this program did wonders for one Billy Kidman.
How is this skinny, unintimidating kid man...
flea market champion.
A suitable heel for this guy who's basically triple his size.
Well, the story behind this, everybody, for those that do not recall, back in 2000, Hulk Hogan did an interview and got tons of shit for it, where he noted in the interview that Billy Kidman couldn't draw if he headlined a flea market show. And everyone was upset that he would make fun of Kidman like that in public. And then Hogan's defense was, well, we're going to be working a program together, which Kidman was not aware of at the time. And that was Hogan covering himself. So then they did do a program, and he made him look absolutely horrible in this entire program. The dynamic was completely wrong with Billy Kidman as the heel. He looked like he was the size of Hulk Hogan's leg. So we go backstage and Eric Bischoff is on the phone. Horrible acting here, I thought. And there were shadows on the wall. Did you note this? Did you recognize this? Or did you fast forward this?
No, I didn't see
it. It looked terrible. Then we see Vince Russo with David Flair and Pamela Paul Shock. And then Ric Flair cuts a promo with Gene Okerlund. And that leads us to Father versus Sunway. Ric Flair versus David Flair. The stipulation, Ric Flair's career is on the line.
Another retirement match.
Yes. David, for this biggest match of his career, is wearing a t-shirt and jeans in prime shape for this big
piece. He's not only wearing a t-shirt, he's wearing a Union Jack WCW Nitro logo shirt.
International tour they're doing.
It's like he just grabbed some random shirt backstage.
Looked horrible.
Maybe he was being ironic. Because it was the Great American Bash. He's wearing a Union Jack shirt.
Rick chops David and Madden calls it child abuse. There was a horrible spot here where David... there's a ducking clothesline, and then David clotheslines Rick over the top rope, and it was not executed very well. Russo then handcuffed Rick and throws him back into the ring.
The referee sees this and stops the match.
And what from there? I didn't even note that.
He doesn't stop the match. He just glances over and just lets it go. Suddenly, you see... You're the referee of this match. One second, everything's fine. Next second, One of the combatants is handcuffed. Do you do anything?
No, I wouldn't.
Charles Robinson doesn't do a thing, just lets the match continue. Yet, when David Flair has Ric Flair in a figure four and uses the ropes for leverage, Robinson freaks out. Meanwhile, Ric Flair is handcuffed.
Scott Hudson then stated, "Father's Day is a week away. First one I've had without mine. And if he were here, I wouldn't want to have him in a figure four leg lock." That line. Well, no kidding. Would you want to put your father in a figure four leg lock way? Russo chokes Ric Flair, and then Reed runs to him. He gets pie-faced by Russo down to the mat. Then Reed comes back and low blows Russo to steal the keys for the handcuffs. Then all of a sudden, Ashley Flair is on top of Vince Russo and handcuffs him. She's wearing all zebra, and it looks terrible. David disgraces the Flair bump into the turnbuckle by trying to do the flip. And in the lineage of guys that have done this bump, from Ray Stevens to Ric Flair to Shawn Michaels
to Charles Robinson,
David Flair definitely broke the lineage. This was very, very bad. Flair then does like two moves onto David's legs, applies the figure four leg lock, and before it's even applied, David is tapping out. So Ric Flair is not retiring either. And then Ric tears off the shirt of Russo and begins chopping him. And Schiavone notes, "What a moment in the grand career of Ric Flair." Russo then grabs the mic.
"Hold it right there, you piece of shit! Flair! I'm telling you right now!
He's making sure he keeps the ring.
You and that little bitch son and that little bitch daughter of yours, you have chopped Vince Russo for the last time!
Uh-oh.
Oh, there's your typical
American family.
Flair!
Yeah, it is.
Tomorrow night on Nitro, I will retire your crippling ass, baby. Me!"
So, for anyone that bought the pay-per-view with this retirement stipulation, well, Nitro is where it really counts. Because the next night, they actually did beat Ric Flair and shave his head. Why they couldn't have done that on the pay-per-view for the people that bought this pay-per-view, I cannot give an answer.
You suckered them already. Why need to pay for more?
Of course not. Then, in a quote that I want everyone to remember for when this next match ends, Tony Schiavone says, "Up next, burn, baby, burn." And we've got way the first ever Human Torch match. Now, explain to us the scientifics of a Human Torch match. And
well, a Human Torch match is something so crazy, so unimaginable, that we've only seen it three or four times before in the WWF. You burn your opponent to end the match. We've seen it.
You have to light him on fire. So Vampiro versus Sting is up next, everyone. First ever Human Torch match. Schiavone notes that the man has no conscience. Not conscience, conscious. So I don't know if that means he is not capable of movement, if he's in a vegetative state, but he has no conscience. Sting appears on top of the screen, which apparently is called Nitrovision on the pay-per-view, with a blowtorch. And Madden is very quick to know, "You can tell that isn't Hogan's torch. He never would have passed it." So Vampiro starts yelling at Madden for not telling Vampiro about Sting's entrance.
No, you're right. They do
he
call
is
him
Vampiro during this match.
They call him the Vampiromaniac.
Yes. Vampiro yells, "Bullshit!" And Madden responds and says, "Ian!" I hated what? This. Early in the match, Vampiro grabs gasoline and pours it all over Sting. And they note that they are the former brothers in paint. So apparently they had some gimmick where they were together, and this was the falling out. Madden points out that it is deathly silent in the arena because they know a human is going to get lit on fire.
Yes.
Is that ironic that there's no heat for the Human Torch match?
Hudson
points out that this vampiromaniac tried to light the E Center on fire in Salt Lake City. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous. J.J. Dillon, who was with the company at the time, actually did an interview talking about this. And Russo actually wanted to light an arena on fire.
Wow.
It got turned down. Shockingly. They wanted to light an arena on fire to get this match over for the pay-per-view. This is the kind of guy you're dealing with, everybody. Both fight on top of the Nitro Vision with the lights flickering out and thunder sound effects throughout the finish. And then it goes all black, and an obvious Sting stunt double is lit on fire. He's wearing jeans, the stunt double. Couldn't even get him in a full Sting costume. And then takes the bump off of the Nitro Vision through the stage, and the announcers treat this as a shoot, stating he's a father. And they're repulsed at Vampiro. Shivani is in shock and speechless, and they take him out on a stretcher as they're taking him out with an extinguisher, and Madden stating that both wanted to be in this match, and they had to accept the consequences.
If you if you've never seen this, just this was exactly like that Cowboys and Indians show at the Universal Studios theme park. When they have stuntmen do all these dives off of the top, it looked just like that. The look on these announcers' faces when they cut to them.
They tried so hard.
I don't know if they were trying really hard to sell or they were just genuinely embarrassed to be a part of this. It's just terrible, terrible acting.
Let's roll some of it.
God, no. Come on.
Beckett Sting away with it. He's back.
Stop, Jesus, down.
Sting's on fire. Sting. Oh, my God. God, oh, my Sting. God. Sting. Oh, no.
Oh,
Sting. Oh, my God.
Oh,
my God. Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus. Nothing more. Hell, there's nothing more. God.
Get the camera off of him.
God. Steve Borden is... He's a father, man. He's got a wife. And get it off of that bastard.
I never thought that anything like this would ever really... Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Thank you.
I mean, Sting agreed to it, but I mean, who would have...
Oh, he's flailing in there. Do you see him? Oh, my Lord.
We're getting instructions from, you know, from the go position about what to say here, but, you know, Jesus Christ, we just watched Sting fall from a 40-foot... Oh, God almighty.
Tony,
what do you want to say?
We just watched Steve Borden kill himself.
The burn unit is over there right now. This is going way too far, guys. I'm sorry.
Son of a bitch right there.
Oh, now both guys wanted to be in this. I mean, I hate to play devil's advocate, and I hate to see what happened, but...
They're using those fire extinguishers, I guess, to keep them cool.
Thank God.
This is not wrestling anymore, yeah. Y'all.
Hell no. Thank God all the safety precautions were taken that were. I mean, let's give some credit where credit's due.
I guess Vampiro got what he wanted, right?
He did.
This is what the new blood is all about.
Let me ask you this. Would we be reacting the same if Vampiro had fallen off the top? I would be. I guess we would. I mean, it's not about wins and losses.
No, it would be. I know. You know, when we talked about setting a man on fire, I thought, well, maybe, hopefully the guy's leg will get on fire, the boot will get on fire, or the arm or something.
But
not the whole body go up in flames, God, we're going to witness this again. Jeez. And look at this.
See, now why are we showing this on replay? This is a little bit too...
Another angle. Well, because it's oh my God.
Oh,
I've never witnessed a sight or the horror of what we have. The man was on fire. The lower part of his body engulfed in flames. There you see it. Did he jump to save himself? Is that what he did? Or did he lose his balance?
Well, there's no help for him up there. At least there's help for him on the ground. Maybe that was like a last-ditch resort.
He could stay up there and burn to death or take his chances jumping, you know, down the stage.
I'm sorry that we cannot sit here as we usually do and try to analyze what we have seen, because we have seen the damnedest thing we have ever seen in sports entertainment.
Yeah, Snappy Banner just doesn't cut it right now.
About that. No, and I'm sorry.
Nothing at all. God, I hope he's all right.
Get the camera off. Get the camera off.
Where are we going next?
So there was the selling of Tony Schiavone, Scott Hudson, and Mark Madden. The same Tony Schiavone who promoted this match by saying, up next, burn, baby, burn, was now very upset, stating that I was hoping that they would just light someone's leg on fire. Not something like that.
But what's most insulting, though, is that you can really tell that the inspiration for that little segment, when they just cut to the announcers with the very serious looks on their faces, you can tell the inspiration for that came from JR and King's announcement at Over the Edge. He's very much trying to recapture that serious vibe that somebody is possibly dead.
So then Tony Schiavone said that due to this unforeseen angle and Sting being taken to the hospital, out of respect to Sting's fans and his family, we are going to go off the air now and keep Sting in your prayers. And that's how the show ended away. No, it didn't. We cut back to Pamela Paulshock with Eric Bischoff, who was bugging Eric about the surprise for tonight. And Bischoff just says, there is no surprise. Zero reaction to a contracted talent being murdered on live pay-per-view.
Absolutely none.
And we go right into the main event, and I can't imagine what Michael Buffer was thinking as he walked out to the ring, turned to his left, and saw a stuntman lit on fire being taken off in a stretcher. And I'm guessing this was right around the time where Michael Buffer said, I am no longer doing your main events. Because this is around when he stopped.
Oh, really?
I couldn't believe Michael Buffer was part of this.
More money. I mean,
yeah,
whatever.
I guess.
If you have the money to spend, why not?
So, if you weren't completely numbed to this pay-per-view, full of stipulations, they saved the best for last. Jeff Jarrett taking on Kevin Nash, with Jarrett defending the WCW title. But before the match can start, Ernest Miller comes out and he announces that we've got some guests for this match, Way. The special guest bell ringer will be Conan. The special timekeeper, Rey Mysterio. The special belt keeper, Disco Inferno. The special ring announcer, Juventud Guerrera. This is after Michael Buffer had done all the introductions. And then the special ring announcer, Ernest Miller. And at this point, I'm thinking, why are they giving Kevin Nash such a big babyface advantage when I realize the Filthy Animals are heels? No clue. Madden emphasizes that the babyface, Kevin Nash, he only has three moves, but they all hurt. What a great job. Yeah. I was bored during this match, Way, so I decided to look up the WCW title history. And guess how many times the WCW title had changed up to this point? This is only June of 2000. How many times the title had changed from January to this pay-per-view?
In that year?
In 6 months.
Five.
18.
Oh, my God.
18, dude. 3 a month.
Holy shit.
And it would change another 7 times during this year, everyone.
18 times.
18 times it had changed or been vacated. Madden calls Nash the Sexecutioner during this match. Nash takes Jarrett into the crowd where they brawl. Jarrett worked over the left knee of Nash. Very, very slow. All selling by Nash during this match. Nash would eventually get the belt right in front of the referee and knock him out. But then Disco comes in and attacks the referee. This still didn't necessitate a disqualification.
No, the ref even counts the pinfall.
Yeah. Filthy Animals then attack Kevin Nash. Nash chokeslams Jarrett. Miller starts to count, but counts 1, 2, and then he's got something in his eye. Then Rick Steiner runs in. Tank Abbott runs out to stop Scott Steiner.
Wasn't Rick Steiner supposed to be a babyface now after he had that
moment? He had a change of heart, Way. He was an inconsistent character. Just shades of gray. Then Goldberg drives in with his monster truck, runs into the ring, and Nash is pointing Spear Jarrett. He's pointing to him. And instead, Goldberg spears Nash and turns heel. And Jeff Jarrett pins Nash to retain the WCW title. Russo and Bischoff come out and hug Goldberg. Fans toss garbage into the ring, and it goes off. Something we have never seen that would change the course of wrestling history forever. Bill Goldberg turns heel, of which he would turn back babyface about a month later.
Wrestling has never been the same since.
No, I'll always remember that heel turn.
They got us again. Oh my God. I didn't see that coming. Another heel turn. This is perhaps one of the most overbooked shows I've ever seen. Let's just quickly run through each finish, okay?
Okay.
Chavo versus Disco. You have an old man running in, and he passes out. That's the finish of your match. Chronic versus the Mamelukes. One guy forgets he's in a match because he's too busy shining his belt. Awesome versus Paige.
Kimberly run in.
And Miss Hancock run in. For absolutely no reason. They run in and they run back out.
Canyon heel turn.
Bischoff runs out. And the paraplegic, yes, Chris Canyon reveals he's not paralyzed and then turns on Paige. All in an ambulance match. We got G.I. Bro versus Sean Stasiak in a boot camp
match where Palumbo runs in.
With the Lex Flexer. Then we got Shane Douglas versus The Wall in a best of five tables matches.
Where he uses brass knucks for the finish.
Yes.
And no run-ins, though.
No run-ins. Oh, well.
Ref bump at the end, but yeah. We'll be forgiving there.
Scott Steiner versus Tank Abbott in an asylum match where Rick Steiner is added and they have a chain only for Rick Steiner to turn on Tank Abbott, but Rick would later turn back heel at the end of the night. And then the first of two retirement matches, Hulk Hogan versus Billy Kidman, when Tori Wilson comes out and attacks Kidman, and you also have Horace Hogan turn on Kidman in the same match, and Hogan wins with brass knuckles again. Flair versus Flair in our second retirement match. Russo interferes throughout, and at one point Rick gets handcuffed, and Reed and Ashley all get involved.
And don't forget, at the end of that match, I forgot to note this, as we go back, they shoot to Ric Flair and Reed doing the DX crotch chop on the arena entrance, and they could not look like bigger dorks. Fuck.
Vampiro versus Sting.
This resulted in a casualty.
Sting gets replaced with a stunt double who gets lit on fire and jumps off of a screen onto pillows.
You know, of all the matches, perhaps, at least it delivered on the stip and was probably the cleanest finish of the entire card.
But it wasn't even the guy who took the bump.
Nonsense.
Jarrett versus Nash.
Oh, how many
for your world championship title?
We had like 80 run-ins in this match.
Entire locker room runs in. Three ref bumps, a monster truck, and Goldberg turns heel, allowing Jeff Jarrett to become your 19th WCW champion of the year. Classic booking, start to finish.
-10 out of 10. And I'm being nice, because people say I'm too hard on these events. What do you give this?
I give this maybe something, maybe negative alpha.
Negative alpha?
Yeah.
Wow.
A completely different numbering system.
Well, that would make sense on this booking.
This is just horrible, everybody. I really hated watching this show.
Like, everyone, this was Vince Russo, okay? When we crap on this guy, this is what he is capable of when he doesn't have an editor and when he can just go crazy. And this company, this would be the last Great American Bash, at least in WCW. Because this company would go out of business in a year where they lost $65 million and lost quite a lot of it in this one show with all of their props and bullshit. It's just a terrible, terrible show.
It's just amazing that nobody stepped in and said, I think this might be a bad idea at any point in the production of this event.
No.
I can't believe grown-ups were responsible for the creation of this thing. Non-handicapped human adults made this.
Imagine watching just the Great American Bash from 1997. Sorry, yeah, 97. And 3 years later, this would be the product. This company was so good at one point. And then this is what they were putting out at the end. What a terrible, terrible show. On so many levels, way. Let's never talk about this event again. The Great American Bash. We have lots of stuff to get to as we wrap up here. I just wanted to get some of your thoughts on the NXT angle from this past week, because we have been reviewing the Invasion over the last month, and we all have talked about how that was completely botched. And then seeing this angle this past week, I could not help but think, had this angle been done in 2001, if WCW was allowed to get that much heat that the NXT guys got this week, would have been completely different. I thought this angle was phenomenal last Monday.
It was excellent. I mean, I, like everybody who saw it, I was very, very pleased. It really didn't seem... The last time I felt wrestling seem so real was probably that whole Matt Hardy Edge Lita thing when Matt Hardy suddenly came back and they did the same thing with no announcers talking. Like it felt like this was not planned. But most importantly, they made these brand new guys seem like a threat. They made them scary. They took them seriously.
How many weeks of bullshit did we sit through with these eight guys? And in one angle, in 15 minutes, they made Michael Tarver look amazing. They looked made Skip Sheffield, Justin Gabriel. Yeah. For all the knocks on these guys that they're not ready or they can't work, if you book guys to their strengths, anyone can get over. Not anyone, but just about. You can hide weaknesses. And these eight guys right now are probably the most over guys in the company right now because of this angle.
Yeah.
They did such a good job. And you can do that with certain guys. You can break down any performer that has their weaknesses.
Well, let's contrast this. This is interesting. Let's contrast this with what we just reviewed. The New Blood versus the Millionaires Club. Very much the same thing. You have the new guys here in WCW portrayed as the heels against the established people in the WCW. How did that become such an abomination? Meanwhile, we're only in our first week, though, so we can't really say that this is going to turn out well.
Yeah, but even looking back at like what I can remember of the New Blood angle was that look what NXT, what they did on this past Monday. You had them come out, and it wasn't like they came out there and laid out the big show. They laid out John Cena, the top guy in the company, and they gave them a main event spotlight. They gave them real heat, and they were perceived as a threat. The New Blood were never put in that position. Billy Kidman looked like an idiot against Hulk Hogan. And in that program, had he been given heat, if he could have laid out Hulk Hogan, I don't know if the visual necessarily was that big of an obstacle. I know when I interviewed Hulk Hogan, he brought up just the fact that, well, the size was too much of a difference. It all comes down to how you book these guys. If you're going to book these younger guys as inferior, that's how they're going to be perceived, because that's how people are just naturally going to associate them if you don't put them over in that sense.
Yeah.
If NXT was brought out and Cena and the company just destroyed them, no one would care because you haven't put them in that position where they are a threat. You said it with the NXT guys. They came across as scary, as dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
They destroyed everybody in sight. You put real heat on these guys. When was the last time you can say a heel had the kind of heat these guys have?
And they have like real believable motivation. They're hungry and they want to get noticed. Let's think back to that Kidman Hogan match. You did not sense for one second that Kidman was this kid, pardon the pun, this guy who wanted to prove that he deserved to be in the main event. He played a cowardly heel. He played a cowardly heel, which is not... First of all, Kidman himself is already a very established babyface. Turning him heel
is so... I thought he was
so,
the wrong guy to be put in that. Put him in with someone that I think is... I never thought Kidman really connected that well as a heel. But
secondly, he was put in the position of an iron cheek to Hulk Hogan's super supreme babyface, over-the-top babyface. And Kidman was just playing the wrong type of heel, put in the position to play the wrong type of heel. And Hogan
had no... like,
definitely probably
Hogan
wanted
can lose
it that
to
way.
Guys and loses in such a way where it's a joke, where he keeps all the attention on himself. And Nash is perfect at that stuff, too. With NXT, I thought, you know, you look at major angles and stuff, it's... There's a perfectly legitimate reason why these guys, why you can see what they're doing. And you can look at all major angles. If there's a bit of reality attached to it, it makes the angle that much more believable and that much easier to tell. That's why the WWE, WCW invasion was so easy, because every single person believed that and understood what the history was between these two. And then they brought WCW in, and they were destroyed right out of the gate. No one believed them to be any kind of a threat.
Yeah.
Very.
Mike Awesome won the hardcore title, though.
Yes. Yeah.
And, Sean Stasiak and Chuck Palumbo were beat up by the APA. I do think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, though, because it's only been 1 week. They haven't had enough time to fuck this up
yet. They will fuck it up.
Yeah.
I'm almost positive of it. But for 1 week, I want to believe that they have an idea. Let's get into some feedback here, Way, because we have quite a bit of it. We'll start off with Fidel Alvarez. Hey, guys, enjoying the podcast. I totally forgot how totally botched the invasion angle was, especially when they had Steve Austin join the ECW-WCW faction. I remember this being totally ass backwards. As for a future review, I'd like to see you guys review the classic A&E documentary, The Unreal True Story of Pro Wrestling. Every time I come across it channel surfing, I always end up watching it till the end. The power plant segment is classic.
What is that? Have you seen that before?
I have. It aired on A&E.
And who's in it?
They had Vince McMahon in it, Vern Gagne. It's a lot of bullshit in it, but
really?
Rather okay. Amusing.
Jeff Finney says, "Hi, I am new to this page, our Facebook page. I have really enjoyed listening to your reviews. It has me going back and watching some old stuff and remembering the good and the bad of the past. I have a suggestion for a review. How about In Your House Final Four? I love this pay-per-view. The suggestion for Canadian Stampede is a really good idea as well."
Jack Pisco writes, "To John and Wade, play more Uncle Cracker."
Yeah, I think we've gotten Uncle Cracker.
We have really resurrected that.
Yeah, thanks to the X Factor. Who would have known? Ashley Longboat, "Haha, I logged into my girlfriend's Facebook account and joined. She probably won't even notice. She will be too busy playing Farmville. There is one more towards 800. Oh, wait, you are already over 800. Woot. That's right. This past week, we far surpassed.
Yes, thanks to everyone who joined this past week. And we continue the pledge to increase our members. Go to reviewaway.com, yeah. reviewaway.com, and by all means, log into friends and coworkers' Facebook accounts and join the group.
Yeah, that'll be hilarious.
That'd be great.
We need more girls who don't know that they're members of our Facebook group.
Nate Milton writes, "John and Way, I second the emotion of Derek in terms of you guys covering the remaining Invasion pay-per-views. Of course we want you to talk about that stuff, guys. We're marks, and as horrible as Invasion was, it's still slightly better than the current product given to us by Raw and TNA." What? Yes and no.
Yeah, we'll get back to it eventually. But
we need a breather from the Invasion.
Yeah, it is definitely yes and no, especially when you look at the rest of Raw this Monday. Travers Cummings, "I finally got my name mentioned on Review Away. My life is complete. I can die now. Just listen to the Invasion review. The thing I enjoy the most about you guys are the countless sarcastic comments that are made."
What are you talking about?
"Saying Taz came out looking like a janitor almost made me shit my pants with laughter. And every time someone uses the word ironic about something that is clearly not ironic, cracks me up. Keep up the good work."
Review Away, biggest fan. Still the best username we have. Hey, guys, just listen to...
Hey, you know what's funny about that? Sometimes I try to type in Review Away in the search field,
and this guy comes up.
Like, he comes up before the Facebook group, so you can add him, too. Become a fan of his.
"Hey, guys, just listen to the review of the Invasion pay-per-view. It was entertaining as usual. Neither of you guys sounded tired or boring. I look forward to the review of the Great American Bash 2000, especially the Human Torch match between Vampiro and Sting. I still remember a visibly upset Scott Hudson noting that Steve Borden has a family after the match ended and Sting was set on fire."
He also wanted to note that this Review Away is the 40th show. Nice work, dudes, on that and this group, and now being 800 peeps strong. Okay, well, happy 40th. Show, John.
Wow, has it only been 40?
40 shows, holy
Multiply
shit.
That by about 3 hours for each show.
Oh my God.
That's how much we've...
Mark Rott, yeah, that's how much we love wrestling.
It's like 120 hours.
Mark Robinson, "While I understand your opinions of the bra and panties match, if you're a heterosexual, hot-blooded male and you aren't interested in seeing Trish Stratus, Lita, Tori Wilson, and Stacy Keibler half-naked, you really need to check your heterosexuality." Well, first of all, why should you assume?
There's nothing wrong with whether people are straight or gay on our Facebook group.
Yeah, why would you assume that? Okay.
Sorry. This got a lot of response on the group way because Stephen James Wright responded, "No. See, if I want to watch porn, I'll go watch porn. I'd rather see real women's wrestling. Shimmer. Some of the older knockouts TNA stuff with Kong. I'm a heterosexual male who enjoys the female form as much as anyone else. But I'd rather the women be taken seriously as athletes than used as silly eye candy for the 13-year-olds and people with the mentality of 13-year-olds.
Jay Hunter says, "Agreed. When I was a kid, this would do for titillation. For if I want half-naked women, I'll watch naked women. I know these girls aren't going to show the goods, and they can't wrestle, so I'm not interested, although Stacy is extremely hot."
And Brian Lindbergh also agreed, "I want wrestling, and if the women can't work, I'm not interested at all. And if you can't understand that, maybe you're not a fan of wrestling." So Mark Robinson getting the shit flung at him for his homophobic comments.
No, he wasn't. He was just... I think people go a little overboard with the... I mean, I don't mind. I definitely enjoy seeing the some of the bra and panties matches sometimes. It's not like, you know... It's not like I don't want to... It's not like it's either one or the other. I think sometimes...
I don't give a shit about watching the bra and panties matches. They fucking suck.
Come on.
Every single pay-per-view.
They're not... You're not watching them for the matches themselves. You're watching them to see these women half-naked. You really need to check your heterosexuality.
All right, I'll phone up my heterosexual provider. Get my rating.
Yeah. Jack Pisco, "I have just finished listening to the podcast. I like the lead-up to the Invasion pay-per-view, although, as you guys pointed out, there was no execution of this great idea, thus no meaningful payoff. Instead, after the Austin heel turn, we got Stephanie McMahon's rendition of Wind Beneath My Ring, oh, yeah. Austin burying everyone in the Alliance, every Raw, and eventual
fizzle
of this angle. At least we got the what chant out of this, Uncle Cracker forever."
Brian Lindbergh, "Just finished listening to the May 30th show and was amused by your discussion of Kane. Does anyone else remember around this time frame when Kane performed the Hurricane Rana on Albert, or when Albert was given the gimmick of the hip-hop hippo? Yep, the Attitude Era was, awesome."
I do remember that Hurricane Rana, but I don't think it made the era awesome.
The hip-hop hippo.
Ethan Allen, E.T. That's what it says.
Where does the T come from?
"Yeah, I got to say how funny it was. I listened to more Invasion stuff, and then out of the blue comes the perfect way to put a group of invaders or rebels over. The angle was awesome." He's talking about the NXT.
Yes. Frequent contributor Scott McCullough, "Haven't posted any feedback in a while, but really enjoyed the Invasion review. Not so much a fan of the week-to-week connected reviews as you guys have done over the past couple of weeks. I much prefer the singular or on-their-own reviews. Just my two cents."
Daniel Power, "What a horrible, horrible pay-per-view. Turning Goldberg heel might have been the final nail in the coffin for WCW. It really makes me wonder if Vince Russo was sent by Vince McMahon to sabotage WCW on purpose, though it's probably more likely that he's just the worst booker in the history of wrestling.
Bingo.
I feel robbed of the 20 minutes of my life I spent skimming through the show. I wish someone would tie Dixie Carter to a chair, clamp her eyelids open, Clockwork Orange style, and force her to watch hours upon hours of Vince Russo-written WCW programming. Hiring Russo to run a wrestling company is like hiring Jerry Lawler to babysit your teenage daughters. You're just asking for trouble." It's Daniel Power.
Richard Lee, "Guys, just finished the review of the Invasion pay-per-view, and as usual, very good job by the both of you. However, when I listened to the segment of Sarah and Deborah talking about what their husbands would do, I thought, did that set the template for those bad Real Housewives show? Think of it, another way for Vince to make money. The Real Housewives of pro wrestling. Anyway, can't wait for Great American Bash 2000. Oh, I think you can. Richard Lee from East Selkirk, Manitoba.
And we got an essay from Evan Harden, which I'll just...
You can condense.
"The WWE Invasion was a horrible pay-per-view. It really ruined Stone Cold's character that night. You could tell as the year progressed, his character fizzled into a stale retread. The only good thing that came out of this was the ECW Invasion and the Heyman promo that night. The rest was pure shit out of a bottle. First off, why wouldn't you have Goldberg in the main event that night when he is your world champion?" Oh, sorry. Then he talks about the Great American Bash. Wait, what? he starts talking about a bunch of random WCW.
Yeah, Goldberg
shows.
Wasn't the champion.
Yeah, he's talking about WCW Road Wild 1998. He's just like,
I'm currently watching Road Wild 98. What a random tangent.
All right, I'm not reading the rest.
Brian Hillhouse, how about a contest to create a new review away intro, 20 to 30 seconds? Can only use sound bites from past episodes of the show set to music or not set to music. If anyone wants to have fun, be my guest. And let's finish off away with Paul Williams.
Paul Williams, I first started following WCW in 1995. Since then, I've seen many of their past events, 80s and 90s, on VHS. The very first WCW pay-per-view I ordered was the 1996 Great American Bash, which was an awesome show. The 2000 Great American Bash, however, was the complete opposite. Seeing WCW go from being the number one promotion in North America, then seeing their downfall in 1999 to 2000 was heartbreaking. When Russo showed up on Nitro for the first time in April 2000, I knew what was ahead. I saw the writing on the wall. The reason I kept watching was because there was always a chance it could get better, but it never did. Watching during this time almost destroyed this lifelong fan's love of pro wrestling. With that said, the Great American Bash 2000 was the worst WCW pay-per-view of all time. Take care, guys. Love the show.
Worst WCW pay-per-view of all time.
I can't even keep track.
That's a good feedback question to post on the wall. What do you guys think was the worst WCW pay-per-view of all time? Because there were some atrocious ones. Great American Bash 91. Take your pick from 2000. There were some dreadful ones there. And as I recall, the last couple, right before they went out of business, were actually pretty decent because half of it was cruiserweight matches. And no one gave a shit. All the old guys went home.
That's right. Towards the end.
And they started pushing guys at the end. So we'll wrap up here, everybody. That's the end of our review for this week. We should go through the photo contest really quickly because we got a number of people posting their invasion pictures from earlier this week, and there were some really good ones. The best one, we asked people to try and incorporate all four of the people involved in the invasion, and we're going to send out a prize to Eric Creamer, who put together Shane, Stephanie, Vince, and Paul Heyman all together into one poster, which looked pretty... Some pretty good Photoshop work, I thought.
Yeah, probably the best looking of the bunch, and he got it very fast, too. So
then the others we got from Tom Puenicki. He put together William Shatner and Han Solo. I know I butchered his name there, and I apologize, Tom. And he also sent in one of Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. Andrew McMahon sent one in of Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny. Richard Hume put one together of myself and Bubba the Love Sponge. Rohan sent in one of Way and Sean Waltman. And then Mark Cardoso sent in three, one with Dixie Carter and Vince McMahon, Dana White and Vince McMahon, and then Hogan and Bischoff together with Vince Russo in the background. But the one that stood out the best to us, and I laughed, was from Rude Klassen, who put me and Way together. Very good Photoshop work, first of all. And I laughed harder when you pointed out to me that it said, Invasion, A-S-I-A-N. Very clever.
Very clever. Good job.
So, Rudd and Eric will be getting prizes in the next week. So, congratulations,
Rudd
guys.
Rudd or Rude?
R-U-D-D.
Oh, Rudd.
Okay. Like Paul Rudd. Maybe.
Nice. Yeah, thanks for all your submissions, guys.
Some very good photos up there, guys. So, thank you very much. And we'll wrap this one up with whatever's on tap for next week, Way. Because
next week, I'd like to review a promotion that we'd never reviewed before on this show, ROH, Ring of Honor. I'd like to review a show of theirs from 2004 that features Samoa Joe. Basically, a lot of guys that are on top of the big two right now. You got a Samoa Joe match with and you got CM Punk on there too, Loki, Danielson, all those guys. So, Final Battle 2004 from ROH. We'll be reviewing that.
All right, Final Battle 2004 will be our show for next week. And I didn't know what to pick today for a song going out, so I decided to go back and look at the Billboard Top 40 Mainstream Singles list of what was the number one mainstream single when the Great American Bash 2000 took place. And this song hit number one the day before on June 10th, 2000. So we're going to go out with Oops, I Did It Again by Britney Spears.
I did it again. I made you. Well, baby, I went down and got it for you.
Aw, you shouldn't have.